My whole life policy, she's the beneficiary of a $2 million life insurance. It's hers, right? I don't really care, right? So for me, it gets me into places where I can help a lot of people because I don't really think of myself so much because it's not as exciting for me. But I would, let's say you and I do a deal, I will spend more time thinking about how to make you wealthy than you would ever do in your entire life.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Vince Rodriguez is a full-time engineer, currently has 28 plus units under management that he owns. Vince, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Sam, for having me.
Hey, man, thanks for coming on. I understand, you know, right now you're taking the time even out of your busy workday. You're in the middle on your lunch break, if I'm not mistaken. So thanks for coming on the show and chatting. There are three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show in 90 seconds or less. Can you tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
I started in California. A bunch of my properties are located in Bakersfield in Kern County. I'm actually up to 30 units now, but yeah, started with the triplex over there. Started with $250,000, my first asset. I would say currently my portfolio is worth over $5 million.
Wow, that's really, really cool. I mean, to find opportunity as rental property in Southern California is kind of hard to do. And I think one of the things we talked about before we started recording this was that you've done some really unique deal structures. And I'd love to kind of spend some time working or walking your way through some of those structures you've done. And I think we'll just use that for the bulk of this show, if you don't mind. So give us a couple stories, tell us what you've structured and kind of how you've done it.
Yeah, so how I started was I have a W-2 job. I do all my deals so far, mostly with my buddy Andrew. So we are 50-50 owners in a LLC we own in Wyoming, and we have a California LLC too, right? So how I do is we've started buying the first $1 million we bought by ourselves. You know, we had some money, right? After that, it's kind of difficult. As you know, in real estate, you can only save so much money because they print so much money. It's very hard to keep up, right, with inflation and such. So what I decided to do was to do what you guys do, like syndication style. However, I primarily focus on 1-4 units, right? So I structure the deals. I take people's money and we put it in an escrow account, and then we go buy something and split it 50-50, right? But I have taken this another level, but I cannot give them, you know, equity split, but equity split has like a basic returns structured in it. And, you know, it's a tenants in common agreement. So you don't have to create, you know, freaking 50 LLCs with all my partners, and you're paying like California franchise board tax. It just gets ridiculous, right?
Right.
So you got to know all the little intricate details to those kind of deals. So
that's really, really intriguing. Can you break down that for us, maybe piece by piece? You syndicate it like a traditional syndication, but yet I said you do a tenant in common deal. How does that work?
Yeah, so I steal the ideas from syndication, but I don't syndicate it. I don't have to do F506C and stuff, right? Because it's JVs, right? So JVs, when you go tenants in common, is mostly JVs, right? So what will happen is, let's say the Sam Wilson will be 50% owner, and then On the Holdings LLC will be the other 50% owner, right? So now you get no protection from SEC anyone, because I'm just saying, hey, you could choose the paint color, you could go paint it, you could list the property with me. So there is no protection for you other than just we're joint venture partners, right? That's so I take that liability off, so I don't have to register the SEC or have the 506C or a B and all those things, right? So now I could go do a lot of these little deals. I could go easily raise $50,000 from someone and keep buying $300,000-$500,000 little apartment, right? So I mostly just do duplex, triplex.
Gotcha. That's really, really intriguing. I mean, you even said, which I want to get into that. Let's talk a little bit about finding opportunities in Southern California. I mean, how does the math work on a $500,000 deal such that you and your investor both get paid?
So yeah, exactly. So I live in Southern California. My deals are not in OC or LA County, right? LA County is getting ridiculous with all the mandates and stuff. So what I do is I buy in Kern County, which is Bakersfield, which is more upward, right? So it's away from the ocean and stuff. So you can still find cash flowing assets and such over there. And I also own a few duplexes, Inland Empire, which is like Mentone, you know, Highland, California. We just got something tied up a couple of days ago. It's a duplex for $665,000. It'll bring in about $4,500 in income, right? So that still gives me like, you know, $500-$600 of leverage after I pay all the bills and stuff. So there are still opportunities, but I am moving away from really C minus, those kind of areas. It's kind of annoying. So for me to deal with it now that I have enough assets, so I'm actually liquidating about $1 million. And then I'm probably going to cash out maybe $350 from that. And then I'll go to my buddies, friends and family and raise another $350 pretty easily in like a couple of months, right? And then $700,000 will let me buy easily over $2 million, right? So now I take my garbage deals, which I bought like back in the day because I didn't know anything, right? So I'm going to exchange because people want to overpay right now. So right. I take all that cash and then go to some like state where they actually want our business, like, you know, like Florida or Georgia, where they're more red, they're more landlord friendly. I have a tenant in California who hasn't paid me in 11 months. I'm just getting in evicted on Wednesday. So it took the people 11 months to say the court finally looked at it and said, he doesn't even have a lease. He's a squatter. He does not get rights anymore. But for them to realize that, it takes 11 months, right? So it's like not really a good use of your time to, you know, deal with all these little tenants. So I say, if you want to stick with California, if you want to do the properties here, definitely don't go for the very lower class because they're going to play games. You want to stay with B neighborhoods, right? Because people who work out, have a $100,000 job, they're going to pay rent. They're not going to want to mess up their credit.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Very, very fascinating. I love that kind of spin on the syndication model. One, because it obviously saves you a ton of money when it comes to, you know, just legal documentation alone, but also keeps you, as far as I know, out of trouble. And that's something you could do on the commercial side as well. You know, if the deal makes sense, where you can have, you know, one or two or three investors bring, you know, $1 to $3 million on a larger commercial project, you could structure it the same way, I would imagine.
Yeah, I'm actually going to do that. So right now, you know, I'm going to be liquidating some of my older assets, which, you know, they cause some management problems, right? They still cash flow, but it's not worth my time anymore. So I'm going to liquidate those. I'm going to have like, let's say $300,000 in cash. I'm going to go to my buddies, right? And then what I'll do is I'll just create an LLC, let's say in Florida, right? Then I would say, hey, you guys are all partners and I'll split it 30-70, right? But I will keep the 30% and I'll be the manager on it. And everybody will just be members, right? So now I control it. They get some protection because it's inside an LLC and they're limited to the capital they invest in, really. I mean, that's pretty much it, right? But then I don't have to go make a $20,000 freaking syndication model. It's not worth it for me, you know?
Mm-mm. No, certainly not. What are some other things that you've done, creative deal structures that, you know, across, I guess, now 30 plus units, what are some other things you've done?
So this will be really interesting for people who are listening, right? So I book a W-2 job. I make six figures. It's not a lot of money. In California, I probably should be on food stamps with that kind of money, right? So I can't qualify.
Especially with your income tax.
I know, right? They're trying to raise it too. So what I did was I wanted to buy a primary residence because buying more properties is not going to give me more joy, right? Like it's fine, it's good, but I want to go and live in my own house. So I found a really nice property in Costa Mesa, which is where I live. Really nice neighborhood, right? So they had a asking of $1 million. It's a 2,000 square foot with 8,400 square foot lot. And it has an ADU. Like, that's good, right?
Wow. Yeah.
So I call they say, hey, never call the agent. He's never going to pick up. So I say, okay, I'm going to call the agent, right? I call the listing agent. I'm like, what's your best offer you got? After I talk with him, he says he got about 115 on it. So I said, I'll offer 100K over your best offer, right? So I just destroy everybody else who's competing on the offer. It's over for them because I'm offering $250,000 over asking, right? For me, money doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, right? So I go into escrow and then I find out, I do the appraisal. I have no contingencies. I only have loan contingency. I go into escrow and I say, okay, let's do the appraisal. It comes in at 113 and then I do some inspection and I check, okay, it's got some foundation issue. I already know it has foundation issue. So now I take this information. I say, listen, this property is not going to sell. You already came out of escrow one time. You don't want to go back to the seller and say you can't perform again. So here's what I could do. I'll offer you $1,050,000, right? Give me, and then we settled on $1,075,000. So I literally wiped everybody off the competition, right? And then I stole the deal. Literally, I stole the deal because you cannot discount somebody who offers 100K over the best offer, which is ridiculous, right?
Right.
And then I come back to what it's worth, right? So I actually bought the property at the end, $40,000 below appraised value. And I can fix up the house easily for $40,000, right? Now, I don't even have that much money to put down, right? So it cost me $120,000. So I go to my sister and I say, hey, do you have $120,000? She's like, what do you want now? She's already like one of my biggest investors. I'm like, just wire it is fine, right? So I take her money, $120,000, and I give her half of the house in equity, but I get to live in it, right? So she has 50% equity, tenants in common again, here we go. And I live in the house and I keep 50%. What are the chances it goes up by 5% a year in Southern California over the next 5 years? Probably about 1,000,000,000%, right? So it's going to go up, right? So in 5 years, I'll return her money. Now she owns half of an asset, which is probably worth $1.5 million, right? So that's how I do the deals. I'm very long-term focused. I don't make a lot of money per se in terms of cash flow when I structure these deals. But I have millions of dollars in equity by doing all these little creative strategies because I don't make a lot of money, open about it, but I can go and do these deal structures.
That's really intriguing. I love the kind of not gaming the system. That's probably the wrong word, but using the tools that are in place, the rules that are in place that say, okay, you know, this is the way this works. And you found a creative way to navigate those and come out with a favorable outcome. The house with the foundation issues, how did you know it had foundation issues? Did you get to see it?
I could see it. They said, hey, don't do this. Don't do that. Don't pull the carpet. So I did all of that, pulled all the carpets and I found the cracks and all that. So I took pictures. I got all the foundation guys, give them quotes for about 150 grand. That's how much it was going to cost to repair, right? So then, you know, I reduced the properties from my bid to $175,000. And then I bought it. It's a good buy at $1.75 million.
Right. Yeah. Especially on that big of a lot with an accessory dwelling unit. Will you rent out the ADU?
Yeah. So, you know how much money I make. I told you, right? The mortgage is $6,000. That's almost all of my money if I pay 40% taxes, right?
Right.
So what I would do is I would have a couple of roommates pay me about $3,000 in rent. And then I'll go. And then my buddy, my business partner, Andrew, he's going to take over that back unit and then he's going to Airbnb it. Right. So that'll easily bring me another, you know, $1,500 or $2,000, right? So that's about, you know, $5,000 almost. Mortgage is $6,000 after I put 120 down. So I'm only spending about $1,000. In a couple of years, I'll raise the rents. The Airbnb will bring in more money. So now not only have I moved into a property that I put no money down, I'm also living in it and it's worth $1 million and I own most of it. And these are the deals you could do.
Right. And I think the creative thing that you've done there is you're willing to give up equity. Like you're willing to share the large portion of that with someone else and just let the chips fall where they may, because it lets you get in again. It lets you get into deals without a whole lot of money out of pocket.
Yeah. So how I do it is I love to work with people I love, right? It's my sister, right? She owns half the house. I own so much property. I have a trust and, you know, the beneficiary is her. Everything goes to her. I don't have wife or kids, right? And she has a couple of nieces, right? I have. It's all going to her anyway. My whole life policy, she's the beneficiary of a $2 million life insurance. It's hers, right? I don't really care, right? So for me, it gets me into places where I can help a lot of people because I don't really think of myself so much because it's not as exciting for me. But I would, let's say you and I do a deal. I will spend more time thinking about how to make you wealthy than you would ever do in your entire life. That is my talent. Because I really do think about, like, if my mom gave me money, I'll think about my mom, or if my buddy's mom gave me money, I'll think about them for a long time. And I want to see what the best I could do for them. Because, you know, like the quote I like from Spider-Man is like, you know, great power comes great responsibility. And right. I like to think like that because not everybody can do what you're doing. They can't have an investment group and go raise millions of dollars. Not a lot of people can do, but you're helping a lot of people. Because they will be tied to some garbage yield with the treasury or crap S&P 500. And then they say, hey, you want your money back? Sorry, it's tied for 40 years and we'll charge you 10% and income tax on it. If you want your money, which you gave me, and I'm buying yachts with your money, I could use it, but you can't. That is insane to me.
Right.
That's what most Americans do, which is fascinating to me.
It's fascinating and mind-boggling, to say the least. That's really, really intriguing. I love that mindset, that ability, again, to find a creative way to do that too. I wonder, if you were to sell this house, because you own or occupy it, would your sister then, let's say you made we'll just throw a number out there, $500,000, would your sister end up paying taxes on that, or would it be owner-occupied?
No. So, I mean, it's my sister, right? So I could, let's say there's a $250,000 capital gains I get from it, right? I'll sell it and I'll keep it. I don't know how that actually works. I have to ask my CPA, but assuming I can take all of it, right? Or I could claim the deal. I'll change ownership. I'll say I own it 100%, sell the property, give her 125. I don't care, right? You could do that too.
Right. That's really, really intriguing.
But I would never sell this asset. I would always rent it out.
Right. And that's the next question. I mean, other than graduating out of, you know, Class C-minus properties, is your long-term goal just to continue to acquire assets?
Yeah. Slowly, I'll sell away the assets that I don't like as much, but I'm still cashing out tons of money from it. And then I'll start acquiring assets where it's nice assets. Like the one I'm buying right now in Highland with my buddy Steve, it's worth $665. It's a 2021 build. It's nobody has lived in it ever. It's brand new.
Wow.
right? So those assets are good to hold for a long time. What are the chances it's going to have plumbing problems? Probably zero.
Right. Yeah. I would much rather own something brand new than something 40 years vintage. That's for sure. Vince, this has been intriguing. Thanks for taking the time today to break down some of these creative structures. Is there any one more that comes to mind that you've done that's been particularly compelling you'd love to share?
Yeah, sure. So I'll give you, I did four of these, but I'll just give you one example is when COVID hit, I started doing these deals more aggressively. When COVID hit, I had two properties and my assets were about $500,000, right? Now, it's still COVID, apparently, right? And then my assets are $5 million because I read the book 10X, right? Grant Cardone, I'm all about it. So I've done that. How did I do that? So for example, let's say 2020, I bought a house with my sister. It was a triplex. It was $200,000. She put $50,000 down, whatever, right? We bought this, simple math, right? And I bought it with Loan Depot. Loan Depot has this product that if you wait a year and you do a refinance, it's free of cost. They don't charge you for it. It's called a lifetime guarantee. So I waited a year. Property value went up by $50,000, right? Pulled all of the money out, about the same interest rate. She got 100% return off her money, and she owns half of that asset. I did this with three other people, right? So what are the chances these people are going to give me money again, right?
Pretty high.
So it's really high. So now my family is thinking about liquidating portfolio in India. It's handing me money. You know, that's a lot of stuff I could do with that.
That's fantastic. Vince, I love it. I love the creativity and the hustle involved there. That's loads of fun. Let's jump here. Let's go to the final two questions, if you don't mind. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
I help people. I like to help people who cannot help themselves as well, as you know, as long as it's mutually beneficial. I care about those things.
That's fantastic. I love that. And Vince, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, I have my Instagram. It's called Envy Invest. And then I also have my own podcast. It's called RE Social.
RE Social. I love it. Vince, thank you for your time today. I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Talk to you soon.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.